From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. More and more people are signing up to have their pets certified as comfort animals, and while they do help people with post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, or anxiety, comfort dogs are different from medical assistance dogs. There are differences not only in how they are trained and certified, but also in where they are allowed to go under the Americans with Disabilities Act. We'll talk with service dog trainers, representatives with the ADA, and with the president of the local Council of the Blind to clear up confusion about what animals can go where. Plus, telling stories is one of humanity's oldest traditions and enables Area Creative Effort is bringing that storytelling conference to our region for amateurs and pros alike. The Heart of Storytelling Conference is focusing on stories with an emphasis on the art. And organizers say they're paying particular attention to helping novice storytellers shape their family heritage and put it in story form. Ahead, we'll talk with the organizers of the Naples Conference and with two of the storytellers who are scheduled to be there. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. How comfortable are you getting in front of a room of strangers and telling a story? Not just any story, but your story about your life, family, and traditions. Coming up in the second half of our show, we'll talk with the organizers of a Naples storytelling conference about how they're hoping to turn storytelling amateurs into pros with some help from well-established authors, speakers, and more. But first, confusion about what kinds of service animals are permitted where has led to businesses letting people slide for fear of stepping on someone's paws or, worse, being sued for discrimination. There are different laws which pertain to different areas, public spaces, housing, and airline travel. Rebecca Williams with the Southeast ADA Center is here to talk with us about what Americans with Disabilities Act covers. Thank you for being here, Rebecca.
Oh, I'm glad to do it. Thank you.
And also, there are different service animals, mainly dogs, which have varied levels of training, service dogs, therapy dogs, and emotional support animals. Carol Borden is the CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs and joins us to talk about the big difference in training for these classifications. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Mary Ann Grignon, the president of the Southwest Florida Council of the Blind, who can talk about why knowing the difference is critically important for people who rely on service animals to get through their day. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We are talking about the difference between emotional support animals and service animals and where each are allowed to go in accompanying their person. Do you have a question or a comment? Share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. First, I want to ask Rebecca Williams with the Southeast ADA Center, where are service animals allowed to go and how is a service animal defined by the ADA?
Great place to start. And one of the things we'd like for folks to understand is it's the individual, the handler, that has the right to take the dog, not so much that the dog has rights under the ADA. A service animal under the ADA is defined as a dog, and in some unusual cases it may be a miniature horse, but a dog that has been specifically trained to perform one or more services or jobs or tasks for an individual with a disability that person cannot perform for themselves. And when a service animal is trained, under control, and housebroken, it can go anywhere in the general public with the handler that people are allowed to go.
And that covers public spaces?
Yes, it covers public spaces. So you're looking at, sometimes people say to me, well, I'm a private company, I don't have to allow a service animal. Public accommodations under the ADA, what falls under Title III, are private businesses. So we think about where we spend money, and that's Title III under the ADA. It also is state and local governments, so it's buses, Amtrak train stations. So pretty much anywhere a person can go, a service animal that's under control when housebroken is permitted to accompany their handler.
And then for non-public spaces, there are other governing bodies who stipulate different things, such as the Department of Justice and Housing and Urban Development Fair Housing Act that says that disabled owners of emotional support animals must be allowed in housing with no pets policies. That covers emotional support as well as service animals, correct?
It does. That's correct. That's Fair Housing Act.
Okay, and then on airlines, that's another thing. That's the Air Carrier Access Laws, which covers airplanes. The ADA covers the airport itself. That law says that people are allowed to travel with service animals and emotional support animals. However, the airline can ask the person with a disability to provide a letter, which is no more than a year old from a licensed mental health care professional, saying the following three things, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, that the person does have a mental disability listed in the DSM-4, which is a book that serves as an official listing of mental disorders, but they don't have to say what the person's specific issue is. But then the licensed provider has to also say that the presence of the animal is necessary for the passenger's health or treatment, and that the writer of the letter is a real licensed healthcare provider and that the passenger is under that person's care. That's about getting on airplanes, correct?
That is correct.
And that is with the air carrier access laws, which is different from the ADA.
Correct. And as you said, the Air Carriers Access Act actually covers the airline itself, whereas the airport facility falls under the ADA.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to another question, and this one I want to direct to Carol Borden, who is the CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs in North Central Florida. Tell me the difference between a medical service dog and an emotional comfort dog.
Well, an emotional comfort dog, let's face it, all dogs give some level of emotional support to everyone, but they don't necessarily have any specific training. So that really kind of puts them on the same level of a companion animal or a pet, versus a service dog is actually required to have skills that are specific to their individual handlers, disabilities, that will actually help to mitigate those disabilities. In other words, oftentimes these dogs help with mobility, hearing impairment, seizure alert, diabetic alert. There's a very, very long list of things that these dogs can be trained to assist with, and that's what separates them from the emotional support dogs. All dogs give that comfort zone, but the service dog is literally like a piece of medical equipment with a heartbeat, because they actually are providing a service other than comfort. They're actually providing a skill to their recipient.
And Marianne Grignon, you're the president of the Southwest Florida Council of the Blind. Why is it important for people to know the difference between an emotional support dog and a service dog?
It's especially important for public establishments to know the difference so that they could feel comfortable excluding a person who comes in with their, in quotes, emotional support animal. Emotional support animals are not allowed in public places such as grocery stores. The Bell's stores, I see dogs in Home Depot a lot. They, again, as my two colleagues have said, they are allowed in housing and on aircraft with certain documentation. They're not allowed in public establishments other than those. So if a person who owns a store or a hotel, that's another big one, a hotel, has a no-pet policy, these animals would not be allowed. However, I, with my guide dog, I have a service animal who's a guide dog, would be allowed in any of those locations. And it's important for the establishment to know the difference so that they can feel free to say this dog's not well behaved, seems more like a pet. There are only certain questions that an owner of an establishment can ask. That is, do you have a disability and does your dog perform a service related to that disability? That's probably not the exact wording of those questions, but along that line. And if the person with a comfort animal cannot answer those questions in the affirmative, then that's a comfort animal and they're not allowed in those establishments. And it's important that the person who owns the establishment to know they have the right to ask a person with a comfort animal to leave. It should be noted, too, though, that if a person has a service animal and that service animal is not well-behaved and is out of control, that the service animal can be asked to leave. And the first person who spoke from the ADA center made a good point about the handler being the person with the right. So the handler has the right to continue to receive services even if their dog is not well behaved, but the dog can be asked to leave, which essentially means that the handler is probably going to leave too. But if a dog, even if it's a service animal, is not well-behaved and not under control and is a threat to other patrons, that dog is not necessarily welcome in that establishment.
And I don't want to speak out of turn about service animals, but Carol Borden, as the CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, It's pretty tough to become a service dog, isn't it?
Yes, that's a very good point. Not all dogs can be service dogs. I kind of relate that to not all people can be rocket scientists. So service dogs tend to be the rocket scientists of the dog world because we do demand quite a lot of them. They have to be able to cope with all different types of situations in public, different obstacles, different sights, smells, sounds, things that the normal pet would not be exposed to. And not only are we asking them to have the temperament and the soundness to deal with all of that, but still be alert and ready to any need that their recipient might have at any moment. So there's a very high demand. A lot of training goes into these dogs to be sure that they are capable of caring for their recipient.
And I wanted to ask you also, if you ever have a comfort or emotional support dog that's not trained, but it has its little certification, I guess, and it's being called an emotional, if they're not behaving and they're nipping and kind of barking at another service dog, can that ever create a problem?
It absolutely creates a problem. And we can, again, the merchants can certainly ask any dog that's ill-behaved to leave, whether they're certain that it's an emotional support dog or a service dog. And, you know, people who are handling service dogs, it's very important that other dogs like that do not approach our dogs because we never want our dogs to be involved in any sort of a confrontational situation because, you know, dogs do have their own social dynamics and we don't want them to have to cross those lines. We want them to continue to be just as sound mentally as they are physically and be able to continue to care for their person in the environment and not worry about a marauding dog that's not behaving.
And Marianne Grignon, I wanted to ask you if you've been in a situation where you've had your dog, your service dog, and there was a comfort dog that didn't know how to behave. I mean, does that put you in a certain amount of danger when a service dog is being distracted?
Absolutely. And from my point of view, from a blind person's point of view, we don't know that they're coming at us until it's possible to be in that kind of confrontational situation. I've been in stores where dogs have tried to leap out of their handlers or their owner's carriage to get at my dog who's in harness and on a short leash. And again, as a blind person, I don't know that they're there until it's possibly a situation. So
yeah.
It can be a very, not just upsetting, but distracting to the dog and dangerous for me if he's distracted by having to defend himself or, you know, whatnot. Then, you know, what if there's a flight of stairs or there's an obstacle that I need to navigate?
Well, you're just kind of left hanging there if your dog is fending off another dog. We are talking about the differences between service animals and comfort animals with our guest, Rebecca Williams, from the Southeast ADA Center Information Specialist of Training and Technical Assistance. We're also talking with Carol Borden, who's the CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs Incorporated, and Marianne Grignon, the president of the Southwest Florida Council of the Blind. You can become part of the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Rebecca Williams with the ADA, I wanted to ask a question. When someone takes their comfort Shih Tzu or Chihuahua into a grocery store or a restaurant, what can management at the store do? Can they go and ask questions of that person?
Well, sure. And they can certainly do that anytime there's a question of whether a dog is a service animal or an emotional support animal. The two questions that are permissible under the ADA, I think have already been touched on, is that a service animal needed due to a disability? What has it been trained to do? And I think somebody hit on it also earlier. If a person can't clearly state, this is the task my dog has been trained to do for me, then the business owner has the right to say, I'm sorry, I don't think that's, you know, you're not answering that, so it's a service animal. I'm going to have to ask you to take your pet out of the store, but that individual should be enabled to come back into and purchase whatever it was they're originally for to buy.
So, I mean,
Marianne, I think it's important to note that a pet and a comfort animal in any place except for housing or airplanes have exactly the same non-rights.
like the same rights as a pet. But I'm going to ask you, like, here's a scenario. So the manager of a coffee shop sees a person sitting there with her little dog on her lap, and the customer says, they say, is that a service dog? And she says, yes, it is. Don't you see the vest with the patch on it? And then the person at the coffee shop says, well, what does that dog do? And then she says, well, it can sense when I'm going to have a diabetic episode. Is that the end of the conversation?
This is Rebecca. It should be. And what I tell business owners, accept the fact that this person says it's a service animal until or if at such time the animal shows otherwise by not being under control. And then at that point, even if the person insists it is a service animal, that business owner has the right to say, well, you must get your service animal under control or you're going to have to take it out of here.
But he can't ask further questions such as proof or certification that the animal has been trained?
There is no certification under the Americans with Disabilities Act. I think maybe one of the reasons the Department of Justice does not require certification is whereas many dogs are trained in a service animal school, many individuals with disabilities also train their own service animals. So there's no way to standardize how service animals are trained. So there's no certification under the federal law that's required.
All right. We have a question coming in on the phone from Michelle in Naples. Michelle, what would you like to ask?
I would like to know what I can do in my community to kind of curve the emotional therapy dogs. Like start a movement to, it seems in my community, everybody has an emotional therapy dog and it's getting really out of control. Is there some kind of movement or somebody I could write to try to, I don't know, I guess I'm lost. What can I do as a private citizen in my community to kind of curb everybody saying it's a service dog a therapy dog, because the real service dogs in my community are kind of getting lumped in with the bad rap of all these therapy dogs.
And this is a question, this kind of goes in hand with a question I wanted to ask of Carol Borden, is do you see an exploitation of the tolerance for service animals, like on websites selling comfort animal certifications for $65?
It's an enormous exploitation. And in the state of Florida, Governor Scott actually signed off on a bill for us in July of 2015 that raised the penalties for anyone with what we refer to as an imposter dog. And these emotional support dogs, again, are not allowed in public. And let me clarify one thing. Your caller was also utilizing the term therapy dog. And therapy dog is something we've not yet discussed in this conversation, but that is actually another type of dog. And those are used strictly to go into hospitals and nursing homes and so forth. They go through their own training process to be allowed to go into those facilities, or they just visit with the patients for a few hours, and at the end of the day, they go home with their families again. Those dogs do not have any public access privileges either. Now, in the state of Florida, there are penalties in place for anyone with dogs that are imposter dogs that do not belong in public. And an imposter dog would be anything other than a service dog by law, because only a service dog is allowed in these public venues. The law says that the judge has his choice of 2 months in jail, 30 hours community service in a type of organization like ours, or a $500 fine, or any combination thereof. That same penalty applies to a merchant who refuses a legitimate working team into his business. Because even though we know it can be difficult for merchants to sometimes tell the difference, we have had many cases where merchants, they don't care. They don't want a dog in their business, period. They don't care about the disability or the recipient. And so in those cases, it's very blatant that they're in violation of the law as well. So a lot of the exploitation of the law and of these imposter service dogs really is a lack of education, a lack of understanding the different terminologies, the lack of understanding the laws. And, of course, there are people who are familiar with the laws and they don't care. They think that they can get away with it because they probably don't realize what the penalty really is.
Well, I wanted to throw down a little bit of education about the service animal as defined by the ADA. They have to be performing actual work or tasks. And the list includes things such as, but not limited to, guiding people who are blind or have low vision, alerting people who are deaf or hard of hearing, providing nonviolent protection or rescue work, pulling a wheelchair, assisting an individual during a seizure, alerting individuals to the presence of allergens, retrieving items, providing physical support and assistance with balance and stability to individuals with mobility disabilities, reminding a person with mental illness to take prescribed medications, or helping persons with psychiatric or neurological disabilities by preventing or interrupting impulsive or destructive behaviors, or calming a person with post-traumatic stress disorder during an anxiety attack. The last two are the ones where, and maybe Carol, you can help me differentiate this between an emotional comfort animal and a service dog. Those are different skills. Can you break that down for me?
Yes. Let me start by explaining there are both visible and invisible disabilities, and it's the most difficult for humans to recognize those invisible disabilities because we're very visual people. We see a cane or a wheelchair, we understand that person has a disability. And so you don't really realize when someone has one of these invisible disabilities, such as PTSD. And in those instances, these folks do struggle a great deal with nightmares, flashbacks, which can happen in the daytime, serious anxiety meltdowns during the daytime. I mean, these are things that people cannot function through their normal daily life because these are so intense. The dogs in these cases are not comfort dogs. These dogs are, in these cases, alert dogs because they do figure out very quickly, sometimes before the person goes completely into a meltdown, the dog can alert, distract, and redirect that person's focus in getting them calmed down, stopping a flashback. Listen, we have had stories of flashbacks that there could have been a very serious consequence had the dog not intervened, and the dog knows when to intervene because there are chemical changes taking place in these individuals, just as if it were a diabetic problem. So this, again, is a skill. It's not just comfort. Remember, all dogs give comfort. So, yes, certainly there is an element of comfort, but the dogs actually have a specific skill where they interrupt the person's behavior and redirect them.
It's just incredible that dogs can be trained to do that.
You know, I've been doing this for many years, and we've got hundreds of dogs out working, and they still never cease to amaze me.
Marianne, I wanted to ask a question. This might also be related to our caller who called in earlier. Is there any kind of action that the disabled community is taking to try to help clarify the difference between the comfort dog and the service dog?
Two things I want to say to your caller, but to answer your question, the disability community, and I think especially the blindness community, really fought hard to against, I should say, the Doggy Dining Act, for one thing, that was passed last year or the year before. We were not successful. It was passed anyhow. But the disability community's best resource is education. So what we're, this kind of show, there have been some television media personnel who have taken this cause and talked about it on different shows. So the best thing that we feel, our best recourse is education. And to your caller, I would say that their community, if they have a homeowners association, probably should be extremely diligent in getting letters from the doctors, because with the comfort animals, they absolutely need a letter and certification from that doctor that they're under their care and whatnot. I have a friend who just went through the whole process. And I would say that their diligence in screening the doctors and the letters is going to be their best recourse, probably their only recourse.
Is there any kind of a certain vest or a patch or anything that makes it kind of more uniform where you can tell who's who with the dogs?
No, they're all very different. Like the harness for a guide dog is very different than probably other harnesses, harnesses for balance, maybe the harness for pulling a wheelchair. And again, as was stated regarding the ADA, there isn't a certification or anything uniformed because they're all trained by such various entities, by schools, by individual people. And the other thing about that is that there's so much piracy that those things can be ordered on the Internet. I once did an interview with someone who actually showed a card that looked like it was a certification card for a service animal that looked very, very real. And so not having this certification is probably a protection for people like myself, where those kinds of things can be bought on the Internet. I think your behavior, your ability to show that you're a competent handler, that's so much of what is in the education process.
Well, it is also intimidating as a business owner or even just a person who happens to work in a chain, for example, you know, looking at someone sitting there comfortably with their dog in their lap to go and ask them, and then you can't ask for proof. So I don't know how, I mean, we have this law in Florida, which Carol mentioned, but how can you prove that somebody is doing something wrong when you can't ask them any more questions?
I guess it's up to the handler and the dog. And if, again, if they're, I agree with that if the dog and the handler are behaving as a team, then it's probably a legitimate service animal. And it is pretty much the extent of what you can do. And just to comment about the law that was passed, there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not the law will work because of that very fact. How do we prove it? But what happens is if someone suspects that that person is not there with a trained service animal and the charges are pressed, it'll be up to that person in court to prove that the animal was a service animal. So it's not so easy as it might seem. Once you get to court, then the judge can ask other questions. The person at the establishment can only ask those two questions. But should charges be brought against someone with a service animal, you want your callers, your listening audience to know it's not so simple as just answering those two questions, so don't go out and practice, because if you're not behaving like a team, once you get to court, now the judge can ask other questions.
Yeah. We have a call coming in from Punta Gorda. This is Glenn. Glenn, what would you like to ask?
Well, it's more of a statement. I just wanted to reaffirm, Julie, what one of your panelists said about these service dogs being the rocket scientists of the dog world. They're more like nuclear physicists. I'm a public school teacher, and about 10 years ago, I had a student with a seizure disorder, and she had a service dog that would detect the seizures before they started. This is a very large German Shepherd. And teaching middle school, there are enough distractions. I didn't want this large animal in my classroom. I was nervous about this. This dog made itself invisible. This dog was amazing, and the hardest part for me, was to not pet the animal. And I have a great little dog, and a lot of people I know have gotten support vests for their dog, and I've been very tempted to get one for my little dog so I can take him places. But whenever I get that temptation, I remember an actual service dog that did this job and helped this child every single day, a real support. This is a medical alert dog, and I resist that temptation. I just want to say to your listeners, these animals do a real job, and just because you don't want to leave your dog at the vet or board or leave with a friend, allow the service dogs that have been properly trained do their job, and don't dilute the importance and the efficacy of these animals. Thank you.
Well, that sounds like a good statement to leave things on. We have just run out of time, but he also, and that was a wonderful summary, but then another thing that he brought up that I didn't get to touch on, and we're just about out of time, is please don't pet us. That's a big movement. Maybe Marianne, could you follow through on the why it's important to avoid the temptation to pet these great animals?
Because, again, they get distracted. They're very friendly. I have a lab. If anybody out there knows about labs, they're very social. And if you pet my lab, he's going to get distracted, and he's not going to perform his job. I had somebody try to pet my dog while I was crossing a street. So it's unsafe for the handler if you distract our dog.
Yeah, while you're crossing the street especially. Well, yeah. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us today, and I'm glad we got to shed a little light on the subject because it seems like everybody's signing up to get these comfort vests for their dogs, and it's important to point out the differences. I really appreciate you talking with us. Rebecca Williams with the Southeast ADA Center, Information Specialist, Training and Technical Assistance. Also want to thank Carol Borden, the CEO of Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs Incorporated, and Marianne Grignon, President of Southwest Florida Council of the Blind. Coming up next, a storytelling workshop is coming to Naples this weekend, and they're bringing in top talent from movies to novels to comics to help local storytellers find their voice. We'll talk to organizers and two of the presenters at the upcoming conference. Stay with us. This is Gulf Coast Live.